WBZ H 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 8 o'clock. Good morning. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. An official with the Wisconsin Senate is resigning after investigation. No one's saying what Michael Queensland is accused of, but he'd been suspended from his job as state Senate chief clerk since late August. Queensland has denied the allegation. Reporters have put in a public records request, but it has not been fulfilled. Lawmakers on two committees will take a look at a proposed $3 billion Wisconsin state income tax cut today. Here's Nate Wegehout.
The bill is scheduled to be heard in the Senate Committee on Universities and Revenue and the Joint Finance Committee. Under the bill, single taxpayers making up to around $304,000 and married couples making up to around $405,000 would see cuts. The bill would also eliminate income taxes on retirement income up to $100,000. The bill passed in the Assembly earlier this month. If passed by the Senate, it's almost certain to be vetoed by Governor Evers. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Time is running out for Congress to avoid a government shutdown. U.S. House Republicans aren't unifying behind any proposal. Wisconsin Republican Brian Steil tells WISN-TV's Up Front he's not giving up. Oh, meanwhile,
the whole process is broken and needs to be rewritten. That said, often just before the deadline is when a deal is struck.
Democrat Mark Pocan tells WISC's For the Record he'll believe it when he sees it.
That they're going to do all 11 appropriation bills in the remaining handful of days that we have on the floor, which is impossible.
The best chance to avoid a shutdown is a continuing resolution. The old notion that opposites attract appears to be debunked, Roz Brown explains.
According to analysis of more than 130 traits in a study that included millions of couples over more than a century, the authors found that partners are more likely to be similar than wildly different. Tanya Horwitz, a doctoral student at the University of Colorado, says some 82 to 89% of traits analyzed, ranging from political leanings to substance use habits, revealed people tend to find partners with similar habits.
People meet the people they get into relationships with often within social networks.
Horwitz says the analysis shows individuals tend to partner with those who are different for only 3% or less of the traits studied. I'm Roz Brown.
The Powerball jackpot is getting bigger. No one won last night's drawing, so the prize for Wednesday night's drawing stands at $835 million with a cash value of about $390 million. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin State Senate leaders say their chief clerk has resigned in the face of an undisclosed allegation. Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu announced Monday that Senate Chief Clerk Michael Queensland has resigned. LeMahieu said in a statement that Queensland quit following a credible allegation and an ensuing independent investigation. The statement didn't elaborate. According to the Associated Press, LeMahieu's office and the chief clerk's office have yet to fulfill open records requests filed earlier this month, seeking copies of any complaints against Queensland. Democratic lawmakers in Wisconsin have proposed legislation to cap insulin prices at $35 for more Wisconsinites. A federal bill passed last year capped insulin prices at $35 for people 65 or older on Medicare Part B and D. State Senator Brad Pfaff and Assembly Representative Jill Billings want to expand that price cap to Wisconsinites on state-regulated health insurance plans and others. Representative Billings says about 7% of Wisconsinites need treatment for diabetes. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers host the Cards. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers are down to their last six games of the regular season, all home games, at American Family Field in Milwaukee. This weekend, it's the Cubs. Tonight, they open a three-game series against the Cardinals. St. Louis in last place in the NL Central, 20 games behind the Brewers. Milwaukee with a magic number of one. They just need one win to clinch winning the division. The Brewers coming off a 6-1 loss to Miami on Sunday. Outfielder Sal Frelick.
I mean, upset we lost, obviously, because we lost the game, but when it comes to clinching. Like, I think we're in a great spot. We have a big homestand to do it at, so it'll be exciting. Looking forward to getting it done.
Tonight, it's Zach Thompson on the mound against the Brewers' Adrian Houser. The team with the best record in baseball is the Atlanta Braves, now 100 wins versus 56 losses. The Crew is 88-68. College football, Wisconsin Badgers kicker Nathaniel Vaikos has been named the Big Ten Special Teams Player of the Week after kicking three field goals and three-point answer touchdowns against Purdue. Vaikos now 7 out of 7 for the year so far. Wisconsin is 3-1. They face Rutgers at Camp Randall next. The start time announced Saturday at 11 a.m. on October 7th. This is their bye week. NFL Vikings head coach Kevin O'Connell says the next player on his team who fumbles can find himself on the bench. Minnesota near the bottom of the league in turnovers, including 7 lost fumbles. They are 0-3. Last night on Monday Night Football, another doubleheader. The Eagles beat the Bucks in Tampa Bay 25-11. Philly remains undefeated. The Bengals held on to defeat the Rams 19-16. The Packers getting ready to host the Lions on Thursday Night Football. Green Bay's Rashawn Gary with 3 sacks Sunday against the Saints just 10 months after surgery for a torn ACL. Defensive coordinator Joe Barry.
It means so much to him with what he's gone through the last 10 months.
Linebacker Rashawn Gary.
We just knew that if we take it play by play and play to our standard, we'd be fine and come out with a win, and thank God we did.
That's Packers linebacker Rashawn Gary. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Daniel's show on this Tuesday morning. It's the 26th day of September. Hope you're having a good day so far. Come on in, get a cup of coffee, cup of tea, and let's talk about some of the things going on in the news today. It is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock right now, and outside today, gonna be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain just about everywhere. Highs in the upper 60s, except for up in Hayward, where they'll still have mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain, but a high around 70 degrees. And in sports today, the Brewers were off yesterday, but they start a 3-game series with the Cardinals tonight in Milwaukee. So in the headlines today, here are some of the headlines. President Biden will be joining striking auto workers on the picket line in Detroit today. That is an unusual show of support for unions by a U.S. president. Also, giant new oil and gas wells called monster fracks require astonishing volumes of water to fracture bedrock and are threatening America's fragile aquifers. Former President Donald Trump is demanding an investigation of NBC and MSNBC, accusing them of treason. Ironic, huh? And Forever chemicals have been detected in several species of wildlife in Wisconsin, including fish, deer, muskrats, and bald eagles. So let's start with another topic. I didn't mention in those headlines there, but something that many of our listeners will probably be interested in. I have a story here from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about what Wisconsin borrowers should know about Biden's new student loan repayment plan. As you probably know, the president wanted to put together a program to forgive student loans, get people up on their feet, starting their careers, and not having that burden hanging over them of $50,000 or $100,000 or more of student loan debt. Well, now they're still, the Biden administration, still going to do what they can to help people out. But as you know, the Republicans would not allow the forgiveness of the student loans. Let me give you a little bit of this story. It says here that student loan borrowers are bracing for the resumption of monthly payments beginning October 1st, just a few days away. A new program rolled out by the Biden administration may help out the saving on a valuable education plan, commonly known as SAVE, promises a lower monthly bill and a shorter path to loan forgiveness. Here's a quote from U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona. He said, this is in a brief interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He said, what we've heard from folks across the country is those college bills are too expensive. So what we've rolled out is a program that only asks you to pay what you can afford. My message to borrowers wondering about it is apply. It only takes 10 minutes. We're trying to make it simple. So here's what to know. Who is eligible and who isn't? Those with federal undergraduate or graduate loans should apply for the program. Parents who borrowed money to pay for their children's education through a Parent Plus loan cannot enroll in this SAVE program. So how does it work? The plan bases your monthly payments on income and family size, and it is readjusted every year. If you sign off on the Education Department automatically accessing your latest tax return from the IRS, you won't have to manually recertify your income every year. Borrowers with undergraduate student debt pay 5% of their discretionary income, which is down from 10 or 15% in other plans. For those with graduate debt, the cap is set at 10%. Borrowers with a mix of undergraduate and graduate debt will have payments weighted somewhere between the two. So what is discretionary income? That is the income left over after paying your basic needs, such as rent and food, and that's your discretionary income. And this new plan, called the SAVE plan, tweaks the formula to increase the amount of income protected from repayment to 225% of the federal poverty guidelines, and that's up from 150%. So for a single borrower making less than $32,000 annually, their monthly payment will be $0, Cardona said. For others, payments will be significantly cut eventually by as much as half. So how does the loan forgiveness part of this program work? Well, under the plan, anyone who borrowed $12,000 or less for undergrad or graduate school would receive loan forgiveness after making 10 years worth of payments instead of the traditional 20 or 25 years worth under income-based repayment plans. Every additional $1,000 borrowed above $12,000 would add 1 year of monthly payments to the time a borrower must pay before their debt is forgiven. Payments made before 2024 will count toward the maximum forgiveness time frames. So what else do you have to know? Well, one of the most attractive features of the plan is that the government will waive any interest accrual that exceeds a borrower's monthly payment. Cardona said, we've heard from people all over the country that the interest accrual is what's really burying them in debt. So if you want to apply for this program, if you have student loan debt,
You can go to studentaid.gov/save. There is a loan simulator at studentaid.gov, and that can help you determine which repayment plan fits your circumstances. You can see what your monthly payment amount will be before you sign up. So how soon will this save plan take effect? It depends on when you apply, but processing the application will take a couple of weeks. Student Loan Services will place borrowers in forbearance if they need more time to process their applications. Applicants can check the status of their application through studentaid.gov. And that's G-O-V, in case you're not familiar with the .gov suffix. Some of the plan's features, such as cutting undergraduate loan payments from 10% to 5% of discretionary income, won't take effect immediately, so borrowers won't receive the full benefits of SAVE, this program, until next summer. So, you know, if Republicans gain control again of the White House, is there a chance that the SAVE program could be struck down? Well, Cardona said he has authority to implement the program, and SAVE doesn't require congressional action. Republicans, however, are trying to stop the SAVE plan. They don't like it, any kind of a program that helps the average person, working class, middle class. Seems like they're all about their buddies who are the millionaires, the billionaires, and the corporations. Back to this story in the Journal Sentinel, it says Republicans, however, are trying to stop the SAVE plan. They said it shifts the burden from those who chose to take out loans to those who didn't go to college, paid their own way, or already paid off their loan. A budget model from the University of Pennsylvania estimates that the SAVE plan will cost as much as $558 billion over a 10-year period. Comes out to $55 billion a year. Pretty small change when you consider the giant tax cuts from the Trump administration. Congress can block new rules by, or I should say, Congress can block new rules issued by federal agencies with a simply majority or with a simple majority from the House and Senate. The president can veto the Republicans' resolution. We are committed, Cardona said. We know that we're going to be challenged at every corner, but that doesn't stop us from fighting for the students we serve. Anything else you need to know? Well, let's see. There's a few tips. Never pay for help. If somebody contacts you and says they can help you out for a fee, don't bother with that. Know your student loan servicer. So know where you got your loan from before you apply at studentaid.gov. And be wary of urgent communications, because scammers attempt to extract personal information by creating a false sense of urgency. So watch out for the scammers if you want to apply for that program. All right, it's 18 minutes after 8 o'clock right now. Going to take our first break. Stick around. It'll be a short one. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Aaron comes in every day looking like he just stepped out of a Turkish bathhouse because it's so hot in there. Just to recap, so far this segment has been filled with dog vomit, old men peeing, and Aaron wearing a dish towel. So we're...
Hey man, your name's on the show. Your name's on the show.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast. Overcast skies today with a chance for scattered storms. High temperatures reach up to 68. East winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tonight. Lows dip down to about 55. Cloudy. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow. High of 66. Upper 60s Thursday, turning much warmer on Friday with highs in the mid-70s. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 60.
This summer, Lake Air, 1260 AM, WLAK has a new starting lineup. 1215, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn directs WLAK.
Lobos, Cesar Rojas, guitarist from Los Lobos, celebrating a birthday today, born on this date in 1954. And if you were watching Sesame Street about 30 years ago, you might remember Los Lobos appearing on that show and doing a alternate version of that song called Elmo and the Lavender Moon. Welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show on a Tuesday morning, 24 minutes after 8 o'clock. And the next story that I want to get to is about the president heading to Detroit to support the auto workers that are on strike. And I don't know if we've ever seen that before in the history of the United States, where a president heads down to the picket line to join strikers against an American company. In fact, in this case, against three American companies, although you could argue Stellantis isn't really American because they are owned by Fiat. So could you call Stellantis an Italian company? I don't know. From what I understand, they still design the vehicles here in the U.S., at least the Chrysler and Jeep vehicles. So I have a headline here from the New York Times. It says, Biden heads to the picket line in Michigan to court auto workers. President Biden's trip comes a day before former President Donald Trump arrives in Michigan as the two men offer dueling messages to a powerful voting bloc in a key swing state. Let me ask you this. If you were an auto worker, or if you are an auto worker on strike right now, who would you trust more? Joe Biden, a guy that stood with union workers throughout his entire career in politics. As you often hear from the Republicans, he's too old. So that's been a long time, you know, 60 years or so. And or would you trust Donald Trump, a guy that's known for not doing too much to help out the working class and the middle class? Who would you trust more? Well, I have this story here from the New York Times by Katie Rogers, just posted a few minutes ago. It says President Biden will travel to Michigan today to join a group of striking auto workers on the picket line, an extraordinary gesture of support to a labor union by a sitting American president. At first glance, the visit looks like a capstone for a politician who has for decades positioned himself as a champion of the middle class. But other political forces are at play as well. Biden will join the workers in Wayne County one day before his predecessor and likely 2024 rival, former President Donald Trump, is scheduled to visit a nearby county and deliver remarks to current and former union members. It is the first time this campaign season that the two men whose political styles are as divergent as their visions for the country will be competing in real time to present dueling messages to a powerful bloc of voters in a key swing state. In one corner, Biden has argued that his clean energy agenda, including a shift toward electric vehicles, will create new manufacturing jobs, even as companies that make batteries and other electric vehicle parts resist unionizing their workers. And in the other corner, Trump has channeled the growing frustration among workers who fear for the future of their jobs. Remember, he wants to take your jobs away and give them to China or other foreign countries, Trump wrote of the president in a social media post on Monday, adding, I will keep your jobs and make you rich, with three exclamation points. Do you really believe that? I will keep your jobs and make you rich. Yeah, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump because he's going to make me rich. Anyway, let's take a bottom of the hour break and we'll be back. Stick around. You're tuned in to your local Civic Media radio station.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
This
summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Ike Ajachi. President Biden in Wayne, Michigan today, joining the UAW picket line against the big three automakers. It's thought to be the first time in living memory that a current president has joined a union picket, and the main sticking point continues to be pay. Members of the union are demanding a 40% increase in wages and stronger benefits. The most recent SEC filings show all of the big three CEOs earned more than $20 million last year, with GM CEO Mary Barra topping the list at $29 million. The three CEOs earned around 300 times what the average employee earns, according to the Wall Street Journal. Inching closer to a government shutdown, no deal in place to prevent one from happening as early as this weekend. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez facing new pressure to step down. Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says he should resign, so do at least three Senate Democrats. Menendez and his wife will be arraigned in court tomorrow on corruption charges. This is ABC News.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. The U.S. Department of Labor has awarded over $11 million in federal funding to the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Wisconsin was among 18 states to receive the federal funding given in efforts to modernize the unemployment insurance system. The funding will give the state more tools to upgrade unemployment insurance programs, making the systems more accessible for users and better defending against fraud. Historians are racing to locate Great Lakes shipwrecks before a seemingly unstoppable invasive mussel destroys them. Quagga mussels are finger-sized mollusks native to Russia and Ukraine. They were discovered in 1989 in the Great Lakes, which touch 8 U.S. states and the Canadian province of Ontario. Now they have carpeted thousands of shipwrecks, layering themselves so thickly their weight could topple bulkheads and decks on wooden vessels. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. This includes a commitment to news. Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Alba Show on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
We'll be right back.
welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show on this Tuesday morning, 8:35 right now. We've got 62 degrees and mostly cloudy skies in La Crosse right now, and 61 degrees, mostly cloudy in Richland Center. And just before the break, I was discussing the fact that Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, is going to Detroit today to stand with the auto workers on the picket lines, show his support for what they're doing. And then tomorrow, Donald Trump is going there to give a campaign speech. And it's a kind of a contrast between the two gentlemen as far as what they're trying to do, what they're attempting to do. And as a comment on that contrast, the spokesman for President Biden's campaign, Amar Moussa, said in a statement, "No self-serving photo op can erase Trump's 4 years of abandoning union workers and standing with his ultra-rich friends." Jason Miller, a senior advisor for Mr. Trump, said the president's visit shows he is on the defensive. Here's the quote. "This underscores the fact of how perilous Biden's political footing is. A state that Democrats would have you convinced is safely blue, to talk with a constituency that Democrats would have you convinced are safely in their camp," Mr. Miller said in an interview. But obviously, that's not why President Biden is going to Detroit. He's not going there to try to gather votes. He's going there to show support for these people who are trying to earn a decent living after having to give up quite a bit during the recession some 15 years ago, and they still haven't really recovered. You know, a lot of the people working in those factories are making wages that barely allow them to get by these days when they have to pay for childcare and other things, especially considering what auto workers have made in the past and the physical demands of that job. Getting back to the story from the New York Times, excuse me, it says in the White House, Biden's advisors have insisted that his visit has little to nothing to do with his predecessor, though they say Biden's appearance is sure to strike a contrast with Trump's planned visit to Drake Enterprises in Macomb County. So that's where Trump is going tomorrow, to Drake Enterprises. And Michigan is seen as a critical state for Democrats in 2024, while Michigan was one of Trump's most surprising victories in 2016. President Biden carried the state in 2020. On Tuesday, today, President Biden is expected to appear alongside Sean Fain, the president of the United Auto Workers Union, who extended the invitation to the president last week. Donald Trump has no plans to meet with Mr. Fain, who has publicly criticized the former president's plans to travel to Michigan. And this is what Mr. Fain said last week. "We can't keep electing billionaires and millionaires that don't have any understanding what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck and struggle to get by, and expecting them to solve the problems of the working class." In May, the UAW, which normally supports Democratic presidential candidates, withheld its endorsement of President Biden's reelection, citing concerns over the electric vehicle transition. Just a month earlier, the administration had proposed the country's most ambitious climate regulations, which would ensure that 2/3 of new passenger cars are all electric by 2032, up from just 5.8% today. Presidents are typically expected to be neutral arbiters between striking laborers and the companies they work for. On Monday, however, President Biden told reporters that he firmly stood with the union, which is calling for increased wages, shorter work hours, and expanded benefits from the three Detroit automakers, General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis, the parent company of Chrysler. And here's a quote from President Biden. He said, I think the UAW gave up an incredible amount back when the automobile industry was going under, Biden said, referring to the 2008 financial crisis during which automakers agreed to contract concessions when several auto companies went bankrupt. Quote, they gave everything from their pensions on, and they saved the automobile industry. I think that now that the industry is roaring back, they should participate in the benefit of that. Since the strike began on September 15th, President Biden has been calling on companies and workers to reach an agreement that would spare a ripple effect through the economy that could raise auto prices and disrupt supply chains. The president said over generations, auto workers sacrificed so much to keep the industry alive and strong, especially the economic crisis and the pandemic. Workers deserve a fair share of the benefits they helped to create. Karine Jean-Pierre, the president's press secretary, declined to say on Monday what provisions President Biden would support in a new contract. She said, what we have said over and over again is that we believe there's an opportunity here for a win-win agreement. And since taking office, President Biden has promised to be, quote, the most pro-union president leading the most pro-union administration in American history. And that's what he said in 2021. But his policies have at times run afoul of labor groups. In December, he signed legislation that imposed an agreement between rail companies and workers who had been locked in a bitter dispute. The bill averted a strike that could have upended the economy just before the holiday season, but it also curbed the efforts of workers and advocates who were fighting for provisions like guaranteed time off and paid sick leave. Other modern presidents have found it difficult to find a middle ground between employers and employees. Back in 1952, President Harry Truman tried to avert a strike of the United Steelworkers of America by nationalizing the steel industry, only to be met with a lawsuit from steel companies. Then 10 years later, President John Kennedy signed an executive order that gave federal employees the right to collectively bargain. But he warned flight engineers and pilots against striking that same year, telling them that it would be too damaging to the economy. And you may remember that in 1981, President Reagan fired over 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, undermining a union effort by arguing that federal workers were in violation of an employment oath not to strike against the government. The decision traumatized the labor movement for decades. Biden's trip to Michigan is part of a gauntlet, it says, of a week. Maybe it's gauntlet. I'm not sure. For Mr. Biden, who hosted a summit with Pacific Island leaders on Monday before starting a three-day sprint across the country this week, beginning in Wayne County, which includes Detroit, that's today. And on Tuesday, today, President Biden plans to travel to San Francisco as well, where he will hold a campaign reception, and then on Wednesday, host a meeting with advisors who develop recommendations on science, technology, and innovation policy. Then on Thursday, he's set to deliver remarks centered on the state of democracy in Arizona. And I should say that's not on the state of democracy in Arizona, but he's going to deliver remarks centered on the state of democracy, and the speech is going to be in Arizona. That appearance is expected to be an implicit rebuttal to the Republican debate and Donald Trump's campaign activities. He will also honor the legacy of John McCain, the longtime Republican senator from Arizona, who died of brain cancer in 2018 and who was a frequent foil of Donald Trump's. And as you probably heard Joe Biden say, he was a friend of Joe Biden's. So that's the story for President Biden heading to Detroit today to stand with the striking auto workers on the picket line. An historic day. It's 8:44 right now, almost 8:45. going to take a break. It'll be a short one, so stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Broad.
I didn't realize that Tucker Carlson's like hemorrhaging viewers. And I heard yesterday someone was like, oh, yeah, like no one's actually watching it anymore. I was like, oh, yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. It's kind of like Threads.
it was a thing for about five minutes.
It was
like
a week. Everyone was excited, and then they moved on.
Wow, it's like Scott Walker's presidential campaign. It's a big deal for about a week.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with a chance for scattered storms. Daytime highs approaching 68. Winds out of the east, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered thunderstorms. Tonight, lows dip down to about 55. Overcast skies. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Chance for scattered rain showers. Highs level off around 66. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 60.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. At 10, As Goes Wisconsin. Then at noon, Civic Media Network News. On Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Turn the lights down. Turn up the music. All the guys here. It's a crazy city. You'll never you mind. Take a powder. Have you a future?
No, no, no.
Yeah.
Man, that'll get you up, get you going on a Tuesday morning. It's music from Roxy Music, featuring Brian Ferry on lead vocals, of course. And that guy is celebrating a birthday today, born on this date in 1945. Happy birthday to Brian Ferry. Man, that was one of the great bands of the 1970s and even in the 1980s after they got back together. Hey, welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show. We've got 8:52 right now on this Tuesday morning and 61 degrees with rain in Eau Claire. 60 degrees with mostly cloudy skies in Amory right now. Most areas looking for highs today in the upper 60s. And when I was going over the headlines at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that monster fracks are becoming an issue. Giant new oil and gas wells. And they require an astonishing volume of water to fracture bedrock, and they're threatening America's fragile aquifers. This is a subject that we keep coming back to again and again and again on this program. Water, the importance of water, and how many capitalist ventures just don't understand the importance of water or care about it. And how important it is to humans. I have a story here from the New York Times. Uncharted waters. Monster fracks getting far bigger and far thirstier. Giant new oil and gas wells that require astonishing volumes of water to fracture bedrock are threatening America's fragile aquifers. Increasingly complex oil wells are sweeping across Texas, the birthplace of the fracking revolution and the nation. And a Times analysis found that these new wells can consume millions of gallons of water, often taken from dwindling aquifers. To satisfy that thirst, energy giants are drilling not just for oil, but for the water that they need. And nationwide, fracking has used up nearly 1.5 trillion gallons of water since 2011. That's how much tap water the entire state of Texas uses in 1 year. This story was just posted yesterday. It says here that along a parched stretch of LaSalle County in Texas, workers last year dug some 700 feet deep into the ground. Now, keep in mind that 700 feet is pretty deep. That's like a 70-story building, right? They're looking for fresh water, millions of gallons of it. The water wouldn't supply homes or irrigate farms. It was being used by the petroleum giant BP to frack for fossil fuels. The water would be mixed with sand and toxic chemicals and then pumped right back underground, forcing oil and gas from the bedrock. It was a reminder that to strike oil in America, you need water, and plenty of it. Today, the insatiable search for oil and gas has become the latest threat to the country's endangered aquifers, a critical national resource that is already being drained at alarming rates by industrial farming and cities in search of drinking water. The amount of water consumed by the oil industry, revealed in a New York Times investigation, has soared to record levels. It says here that fracking wells have increased their water usage sevenfold since 2011 as operators have adopted new techniques to first drill downward and then horizontally for thousands of feet. The process extracts more fossil fuels but requires enormous amounts of water. Together, oil and gas operators reported using about 1.5 trillion gallons of water since 2011, much of it from aquifers, the Times found. Fracking a single oil or gas well can now use as much as 40 million gallons of water or more. These mega fracking projects, called monster fracks by researchers, have become the industry norm. They barely existed a decade ago. Now they account for almost 2 out of every 3 fracking wells in Texas, the Times analysis found. Quote, they are the newcomers, a new sector that burst onto the scene and is heavily reliant on the aquifers. That's a quote from Peter Knappett, an associate professor in hydrogeology at Texas A&M University, referring to the fracking companies. Quote, and they could be pumping for several decades from aquifers that are already overexploited and already experiencing long-term declines, end quote. One thing we should mention here is the fact that some of these aquifers, the water in the aquifers is thousands of years old, right? It's been there for thousands of years. And oftentimes when they remove that water, the ground collapses, and even if you had another 1,000 years to rebuild up that water reserve, it couldn't happen because now the bedrock or whatever else you find under the ground is now in that space that the water used to take up. And I think we're going to take a break now before I get to the rest of this article. So let's take a break for the top of the hour news. It's 8:58 right now. You're tuned into your local Civic Media radio station.
I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you about my town. I'm going to tell you a big fat story, baby. It's all about my town. Yeah, down by the river. Down by the banks of the River Charles. That's what's happening, baby. That's where you'll find me. Along with lovers, buggers, and thieves. But they're cool people.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News,
app.
I'm Ike Ajat.